cliffcentral.com. Jack Parrow, who said, laat ek my peel in jou poes sit.
I think that's officially the best start of an interview ever. That is like, we can just stop now. We'll never be able to top that. It's impossible.
Every time I got you in here, I discover all kinds of interesting and new things about you. So I found out, I was looking into some biographical info, and maybe this just happens because we've known each other a long time. But I found out that you actually had really cuck jobs when you were young.
I did.
You did cuck things like work in the fish market.
Yeah.
I mean, that is
not even in the market where there's like people and stuff, in an actual fish factory where I don't even get to meet like normal day-to-day people. I just get to meet other fishmongers or whatever you want to call it.
That's got to be the worst thing.
I don't eat seafood anymore. I like, because of that whole reason, I don't eat seafood. And it's I promise you, fish, if you want the worst job, other than maybe like working at one of those places where they pump the shit to, it's like work at a fucking fish factory. It's so horrible.
It's cuck, huh?
And everything smells like fish.
And you,
like,
you
it's
wash,
impossible to get it off.
Yeah, you can't. Like, you wash your clothes and you wash your hair and you wash your fingernails and you scrub and scrub and scrub. You can never get that, like...
No, dude, my PlayStation remote still smells like fish. 20 years later.
Oh, my God, it's cuck.
Yeah, I had fucking a lot of shitty jobs, yeah.
And what was the other one? Cemeteries.
Yeah.
Yes, sis. It's almost as if the worst, most cuck, bottom of the barrel jobs. I mean, you know, you're like a working class hero in so many ways, but some people claim that, and they actually were like middle class and had university education and never had to really get their hands dirty.
Yeah.
And then they claim to be these working class heroes, which is bullshit.
Yeah.
With
no,
you,
definitely.
If you've worked in a cemetery and you allocated graves.
Yeah, well, I worked in the division. So where I worked was like
they have a division.
Like where at the
I always thought there was one oak.
No, but so my thing was I worked, so it was really fucking super the fucking horrible. But I worked in the Cape Metropolitan Council's cemeteries division. So I sat and it wasn't like before like computers and all of that stuff, like kind of like
took
over and stuff.
Who's like your boss, the mayor?
There's like a dude, but I don't know, like there's just this guy that kind of, I don't even know how I got that job. I was just one day chilling and then next day I was working at the cemeteries division. And then I had to go through all these fucking cards and figure out where there's still graves open and like allocate them if like it's fucking, it was so depressing.
And people who come to you go, my mother's buried in this one, my father's just died, he needs the one next door. And you're like, I'm sorry, it's taken.
Yeah, it's taken, fuck, sorry about that. We can dig him up and rebury him somewhere else. And then, but it was so bad. And so obviously
did that mean you ever had to visit these cemeteries?
No, fuck, thank God not. It got so, it was obviously fucking boring and really shit.
Mm,
and then
like a bureaucrat job.
Yeah, ended up fucking doing a lot of like smoking a lot of marijuana to kind of get through the day. And then I went just down the street from where it was. There was this dude that sold like a fucking dealer or whatever, this Rasta dude that lived there.
Yeah.
And then I walked down. Then the one day I had cookies, and I was like, fuck, bro, I don't know about. Like eating like edibles in my lunch break. It's like, you never know how strong it's gonna be.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, fuck it, I'm gonna eat it. And then I ate it and I got so fucked that I fell asleep on my desk at 1. My boss woke me up at 5 and like fired me and was like, what the fuck are you doing? You've been sleeping the entire day. And then I went home and slept from like 6 till the next morning at 7. This is literally the most fucked I've ever been in my entire life from weed. Yo, it was hectic.
So is it true that edibles, you never know?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult.
The concentration, right?
It's difficult. I don't trust it. They say like, obviously people can judge it, but I never trust it because you don't know how much to eat. And there's nothing like Nick Schwartz in this comedian I like, he has this thing where he says, there's nothing like as bad as being violently high. Like it's like being so high that you fucking, it's like, completely just over the top high. And from a joint, you know, you're smoking and then it's like kind of like...
you can take a break.
Yeah, you can take a break. And you like, yeah. But if you're eating, you don't know how much that guy put in there. So you have like no gauge. Fuck, it's
terrifying.
Like... terrifying. Yeah, it can be quite... But those were my younger days. Now I just stick to Brannevine.
Now you're like a family man, but I still love the description that you've given so many times of that you're a full-time drinker and briar and part-time musician.
Yes, that is the truth.
Isn't it lacquer, though, that you're able now, after doing shitty jobs like that, because most people don't go through that experience, and they certainly don't get through the experience that you're in now, which is to do what you really love
and
to be able to make a living out of it.
Yeah.
A lot of musicians, it's a hobby. They have to have a real job.
Yeah.
And they don't make enough money, and there's not enough demand, and maybe they're not good enough.
Yeah.
That's part of the reality. I mean, people don't say that because everyone's been fed this crap by Oprah that you could be whatever you want to be.
Some
people just never get to be what they want to be. I mean, I would love to be earning Cristiano Ronaldo money kicking a soccer ball around, but I'm cuck at soccer.
Exactly.
And nobody tells people that anymore. So you got this bunch of millennials who are growing up thinking, I can be like Jack Parra, but no, actually you can't because he's one of a kind.
Yeah, fuck. I mean, I think it is like that. I think it is. It's unfortunate as well. I mean, I see a lot of really talented musicians, and it's always like that. They just don't, nothing happens to, or like a lot of, like, say, would say, like, people that sing amazing, like cover artists and stuff like that, but then they lack in other places. So it's a difficult thing to do. I think it's become people forget that around music's one thing and it's very important, but it's also important to build a brand and to build something around your music that kind of sets it apart, because otherwise it's just another person singing, and that's the important thing. And I mean, like, the Americans have done it well for many years, and the British as well, and they kind of build these artists. They kind of get someone like a Britney Spears from, like, and tell her, cool, does his song, sing these songs, fucking dress like this, and be like that, and then they just push them out. So that's like a different way. In South Africa, there isn't a lot of that happening, but it is. You have to, like, do all that stuff your kind of self these days. And I think in a lot of countries it's still happening like that where people, like, make themselves. I like that kind of, I'm babbling on a bit, I don't know where I'm going, I'm a little bit hungover. Portostrom was rough.
So far you're making a lot of sense. What I'm interested in, though, is that brand stuff, that stuff that makes you stand out, the kind of brand building and the associations that you have to make and the products you have to go into. I mean, you've started your own line of alcohol products, for example.
Yeah.
I mean, these are things, are those the things you enjoy, or do you just realize they're part of the work? It's kind of like being famous is a byproduct of being good at what you do, but you might not have enjoyed signing autographs and doing pictures.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So which is it? Do you love doing the brand stuff?
Yeah, I dig doing the brand. I love it. I've gotten into it so hectically. I really dig it a lot. I really enjoy it. And I also don't put my name on anything that I don't, like, fully endorse and love myself. So I don't endorse products. And, you know, music has changed. We aren't selling, like, millions of albums anymore like people used to do.
You're not selling tampons and...
No, fuck, I'm not selling...
Toilet bowl things.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm selling Brannewein, which is a fucking easy sell. Braai sauce, which is another one that fucking works well. And, you know, it's and I'm bringing out a special one this year that's fucking still secret. I can't talk about it, but it's going to be lekker. By the start of our conversation, you can kind of maybe figure out what
another
it is, but
one.
it's going to be cool. And then, I always, especially when I put my name on it, like something proper, like Paddo Brandy, and I just did a bodyboard as well.
Yes.
I bodyboard my whole entire life. It's something I've always wanted to do, and I brought out a bodyboard as well, which is fucking amazing. Like, I mean, that blows my mind. My childhood self is, like, freaking the fuck out the whole time. He's like, it's really cool.
Yeah, you get, this is what I was aiming at when I started talking about the shitty jobs, is now you've got this life you could never have anticipated, where you're actually plugging in the things that you would have done if you were just born rich, for example.
Yeah.
You would have bodyboarded, you would have drunk a lot of brandy,
you
would have done rapping, and now you're doing that for a living.
Yeah.
And you actually get paid cash for it.
Yeah, I know, it is fucking cool. I'm super thankful about it the entire time.
And dude, wouldn't have happened in America or anywhere else. I mean, I often beat myself up about the fact, you know, if I just had the market that America has, because we've got maybe in this country, the 5 million people who actually have money to spend.
Mm-mm-mm.
In America, you got 500 million people who got money to spend.
Yeah.
And it drives me crazy because the scalability means that you can do with average talent there as well as you can do with really great talent here. So sometimes I get annoyed by that, but there wouldn't have been a Jack Parra anywhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm fucking, like, I love South Africa. South Africa's my, like, blood. It runs in my blood. I can't think
of... We all love it a little bit more this week, right?
True, true. Definitely. definitely. I mean, and I, even through all the fucking trouble, I mean, I was touring fucking Europe when it was like 27 rand a pound and fucking it was like, and I was still loving South Africa, even though I was hating it at the same time. But it was, yeah, because fucking then you're like fucking 27 rand a pound. I was like, fucking coffee's like 180 bucks. Fucking it's like intense. So I, you know, hey, it's a start.
You got some big Dutch record deal, right?
Yeah, I have my own festival in Holland as well now.
These oaks saw you on the internet. How did they discover you? This
so Kulleris Echo just was also a nice hit. It was also a big hit there. But the guys from this crew, they called The Opposite, who are like a really big rap crew there. Like they kind of saw the song and went to Top Notch, which is like the biggest rap label there, and said, "Fuck, you must sign this guy." And then they signed me, and then started touring there and doing promo, pretty much exactly the same as I was doing here for the same amount of time. So I've been doing touring there and punting and fucking doing everything like I'm doing here for also like 9-10 years almost. So it's been built up really well. I said I got this festival called Paro Fest now. I'm signed on Live Nation, which is one of the biggest. Yeah, and they gave me a festival, Paro Fest, which sold out last year. So I'm really stoked. I'm really happy about that. Man, I'm going now again at the end of this month. I'm going to Amsterdam for a show.
So Amsterdam, were you worried when you got there, first of all, that it might not 100% translate? Because there's a lot of kind of cultural stuff in what you do that might not make sense to people even outside of South Africa.
Yeah, fuck. I mean, it's always weird to me still. But you know, when it just happened, it all dropped so quickly. It was like a fucking really like I've been doing it for so long, and then it just dropped, and it was just like a fucking whirlwind. It just was like all of a sudden I'm like in fucking Holland, and then I'm like in fucking Bloemfontein, and now I'm in fucking the Netherlands, and then
Holland.
I'm Russia, and then fucking Germany, and then in the States. It's like insane, like fucking people flying me to the States to meet with me, and fucking like it's like was like such a crazy fucking thing.
Incredible, man.
Yeah, just like really.
This doesn't happen to more than 1.1% of all local musicians ever, if you look back.
Yeah, fuck. It was crazy. So I think it the translatability of it wasn't even for me like a worry yet. I was just like, what the fuck
care.
Is
you just
happening?
Couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I was like, fuck, this is crazy.
But isn't Amsterdam cool?
Yeah, I love it. I love it so
Those
much.
Those people are so happy.
Yeah.
And it's not just the weed, because everybody always goes, you know, Amsterdam, it's all the weed. It isn't.
No, because you know what? My friends that live there,
they have lacquer lives.
Yeah, and actually smoke fucking less weed than my friends smoke here.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if it's
here
legal
in South Africa, it's a coping mechanism for a lot of people. There, it's recreation.
Yeah. And it's because it's legalized, almost becomes like, you know, sometimes like people do stuff because it's illegal or whatever.
It's what I call the King Lear paradox, because it's related to kind of Prohibition America. As soon as you made liquor illegal, people went crazy for it.
Yeah.
As soon as you ban something, and it's this, the reason I call it the King Lear paradox is because there's this line Shakespeare uses. He says that the policeman who beats the whore has a hot desire to use her. For the same purpose for which he beats her.
Yeah,
it basically means that if you stop people from doing something, they're going to want to do it more. It's that old idea your mom said to you, the cookie jar, it's not for you. If you put your hand in there, I'm going to smack you. You couldn't wait to get your hand into the cookie jar.
No, definitely.
And you stole a bike when you were a kid, so this King Lear paradox makes sense.
Yeah.
And you fucked it up. You broke the thing. You were ramping around while everyone else was in church or something?
Behind the church.
Right. And you got the hiding of your life, and you remember it forever, but you don't regret a thing, right?
No, fuck, not at all.
Right. So there's you live this paradox. This is my point. So in Amsterdam, let's just talk about that for a minute. How do you think, is it a challenge for you to reach a certain level of success there, or are you just still enjoying the ride? Are you not thinking of it as a marketing thing, as a branding thing? Because you've got that kind of brain.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think I'm always, with all my shows, I'm always in my back of my mind still like wanting to push it bigger. Like if I was just sitting back and being like, oh, fuck it, this is it, then I think I would be pretty sad. I'm always like trying to build it up bigger and do more and make more music. And you know, it's also about like sustaining. I want to keep making music. I always make music, whether I make money off it or not. But I mean, it is, unfortunately, that is the world now, like touring and brand, like not necessarily me selling things like brandy and stuff like that, but brands getting involved. Mm-hmm. And like someone like Puma or like Jagermeister, who have been with me forever.
Yeah.
If it's not for them, I couldn't keep making music, because music has changed so much.
But these guys,
that's why I have to tour the whole time. I'm like always on tour, which is quite detrimental in many ways to your personal life and to a lot of factors in your life. But fuck, like the Afrikaans people say, terwyl het pap ren moet jy skep. So I'm just fucking gooying now while I fucking can and like pushing it as much as possible.
But here's something interesting about you too that I often get people saying to me. I don't think that you're an objectionable human being, and I don't think you're rude and vulgar and all that stuff. But there are a lot of conservative people, and particularly in the advertising agencies and in the advertising world, who will say, oh, no, you can't touch Jack Parow. He's too risky to associate your brand with. But you mentioned these brands who you've been working with for years.
Yeah.
Now, are they just brave or are they just clever or are the other people just stupid not to see that when there's authenticity in something, because I get this all the time too, you know, ooh, does Gareth occasionally swear on his show? Oh, no, we can't. We're a family brand. You know what I mean? And it's normally not the brand themselves.
Yeah.
Because they realize that the only way to communicate effectively, especially in a world where there's social media and all this other stuff, is to be real.
Yeah.
It's not to try and treat your audience like children.
Yeah.
Even if they are children, they want to be spoken to like human beings.
Yeah.
Do you deal with this shit a lot? Do you have meetings with people and then they walk out of a meeting and you walk out of a meeting and they're like, oh, we can't associate with this guy, or is that past?
You know, I must say, like, I know, like, the brands. I've just known, I don't know, I've just always been lucky enough to work with brands that have always been super excited to work with me.
Is it so the it's brands never, or the people?
Well, the people obviously that run the brand. So if it's like, if that's like, so I've always, so my thing is I will, if I like a product and I know it can fit with me, then I will go to those people and ask them. And I mean, I've been rejected maybe once, I think, or twice, maybe at most, where people said, like, my fans aren't their target market.
Mm.
So what they're basically just saying is that, you know, they don't want to stupid things, like so that my fans won't buy their product, which is kind of strange. That I won't name names now, but it's sad because this my. In those cases, my fans actually were buying their products already.
Yeah, in other words, they don't know that, or they're trying to find an excuse to.
Yeah, because I mean, people fucking. That is one of the biggest things, like market research. I think people know, but people know so little about their brands. Actually, like they think they know who their brands must be, and then I've got, and then they kind of do it, but they don't actually know.
Yeah, and then they've got to trust you to be able to help them sell it.
Yeah.
People are not going to buy it just because Jack Parow is endorsed by it, but they might be persuaded to think about it a little more.
Yeah, exactly.
If they like you and they like that.
Yeah, and they trust me because, you know, I won't put my name on something, as I said, that I don't fucking use myself. So it will. They know they can trust me, and I've built up that. I think I've built up that kind of respect and trust from my audience because I haven't tried to sell them shit. I've always tried to, I've always only done stuff. So if you send me something, whatever, fuck, like anything, a watch, I'll first wear that watch. I'm not going to be like, oh, fuck, I got a watch. Like, guys, look at this new watch.
Put it in the drawer.
Yeah, I'm going to fucking, like, wear it for a bit. If it's good and I like it and it works properly, then I'll punt it. Otherwise, I'll send it back, rather. I'll tell them, like.
When I get stuff that I know I can't do anything with and I can't endorse and there's nothing that I particularly care for, and then I give it to other people.
That's also. I've got many, many a Christmas present. I've been helped out
people
with many
like,
a Christmas.
Oh, this is amazing. You're like, thank God someone wants this. Now, I have to say, when you talk about quality, who designed this album? Because this cover is just the coolest thing I've seen in a long time. I actually kept it on my desk for 3 weeks when we got it. I knew I was going to be talking to you. Just because we need to talk about this. It's like there's a Zulu shield that you can see the CD through, and there's obviously you in the middle of it. But then,
is it a Zulu shield?
I don't know, dude. It looks could
is it
be
a vagina.
I was gonna say it could be a vagina.
It's going both ways.
It could,
Place. That's my designer. He's my Marchant.
Yes,
Marvin good. Marchant, and he's amazing. And we just fuck around, you know. He's pretty much the embodiment of my music in a design sense of form. He's so good.
How long
just
has he been working with you?
Very long.
He's
pretty
good.
Much all my albums.
He's so good.
And he comes from Belleville as well, and he's like comes from the same area, so he understands like the. He's done everyone's albums, Yevils, Fokker Polisiekar,
IT, cool.
All of them, yeah.
And it's so beautiful, it sticks out.
Yeah.
It's like, not that people buy CDs much anymore, but it's
but
nice
you know,
to see.
That's the thing, why we put so much effort in it, for that reason. Like, so people can, you can go fucking put a, take a photo of yourself, put your name on the thing, put it in a fucking CD, plastic, right, piece of plastic, and put it on the shelves. And then it's like, why would
it's
people
a work
buy
of
that?
Art.
But why would people buy a normal thing? Now you want to, but I want to create, if someone goes out and buys my album, it must be worth their while. It must be fucking cool. They must want it. Like, cause you know, like for example, in Holland, people don't fucking, they don't drive cars, mm-hmm, so they don't have CD players. Their laptops don't come out with CD players anymore. So, but they still buy these albums, fucking all of, like, buy them at the shows because, and there's not even CD shops anymore. So they're still buying them so because they like, because, you know,
it's tangible,
something
it's
cool.
A work of art.
Yeah, and you now, can sign it and shit.
I have used you as an example when people say to me, how do you make it in the music business now? And I'm not being flattering or blowing smoke up your ass here for no good reason. There's a purpose to this.
Okay.
Thing that I brought up, because the record companies don't matter anymore, and artists' talent isn't even the most important thing. Not that I'm saying that there aren't talented artists, but it's this ability to add value for your audience, to be able to create something no one else. And it's an experience,
like a niche thing. Yeah,
it's an experience. It's an art. It's a curation that only people who are aware of what they can really do for other people. It's delivering a service, man.
Yeah.
And this is what you do at your shows. This is what you do with your albums.
Yeah.
You're giving people something that's more than what everybody else is giving them.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a fucking plumber, or like a, if you're the best plumber or you're the best electrician, you're getting the jobs and you're doing the effort, you kind of get the jobs. And it's the same with music. I think it's just another job, and and you have to, you have to see it like that.
Yeah, but people say, oh, the music business is so hard.
Yeah.
It's hard because you're not smart enough to... You are. You figured it out. You've figured out a way to make this work.
Yeah, fuck. Well, I mean, I think... I still think, like, there is still space for labels at the start of someone's career, because just from a monetary level, I think that's the only thing labels should really be doing. Labels should not be... never be telling you what you should be doing, what kind of music you should be making. You should be making music that you want to make. And I've speak to fucking countless, especially Afrikaans artists, that are so bummed afterwards, that signed on like a label, and the label like fucking completely made them pop and change their whole fucking thing. And then they became like these stars, like they had their little fucking 2-year, 3-year run of like playing all the festivals and the fucking Milifiesa and that stuff. And then they just disappear because they like fucking didn't make music that actually meant anything to themselves. And then they're all fucking depressed because they're like, now how the fuck are they gonna, they can't reinvent themselves. They can't go back. They can't be hardcore now. Mm-mm. They like fucking already went the route, and that's where they are.
So what do you think of these Afrikaans musicians? I mean, you don't have to name names. You can if you want to, but I watch, occasionally I'll watch, there's now, I think, 2 channels of like Afrikaans music.
Yeah.
And there's Kijk Net and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So there's support.
Yeah.
But there's so many artists.
There isn't a
soap opera star that hasn't, you shake a bush or lift a rock and a soap opera star runs out with a microphone singing.
Yeah, fuck, I know. And there's videos, I don't know how they make those fucking videos. Like, I want to know, because even if I try make a video of that shit, I cannot make videos of that shit. It's like, even if I do my fucking utmost best, my videos can't be that shit. I want that company to start making videos for me, because it's like so fucking horrible. It's actually hilarious, some of that fucking shit.
So what do you think of these people?
Yeah, I mean, fuck, it's like, you know, it's an overpopulated thing that people are just throwing in. And, you know, they can have the music. It's fucking easy to create stuff. And, like, if you get, like, people are writing this shit all the time.
I'm talking about these
stuff.
Love songs and, you know, these socky treffers.
And they pump
and
them
crack.
Out. But there's only, like, 1 or 2 people that are really making money on in that market anymore, because, you know, there's only that much you can... You have to be top of, like, the cream of the crop if you want to make like proper money in that scene. And even I know from fucking speaking to them, but even the cream of the crop guys are circling at the moment, because the pop market is the Afrikaans pop market is very fickle at the moment. It's like very like, kind of feels like it's about to like having a little bit of a
crisis.
It needs a little bit of a reinvigorate. Like, the whole Afrikaans music scene needs like a fucking new kick up the
ass. The reason
arse.
I say this is because I love Afrikaans. I know you do too.
Yeah.
And there's things that you can say and expressions you can make in Afrikaans you can't make anywhere else.
Yeah.
And I proud by Afrikaans, but every Afrikaans person I ever meet says to me, "You're soti." And I don't bother to explain to all of them, because I don't need to defend myself or improve my identity in their eyes.
Yeah.
I love Afrikaans when it's used beautifully.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that it has to be used in a classical sense.
Yeah.
I mean, you use Afrikaans beautifully. Fok Fokkety Fok is one of my favorite songs. It's just like you could play that anywhere. And even if people don't understand the language, they get the meaning.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the reason I'm talking about this is because when I listen to the lyrics in Afrikaans music, so much of the mainstream stuff that I hear,
yeah,
it's childish. It's kinderagtig.
Yeah, it is, eh?
It's like, ek het jou lief, my engel.
Yeah.
Ons is so bly.
It's all just different versions of one song.
It's the same kak. It's like, it's childish. And I think if that's the culture that Afrikaans people are buying, and clearly there's
the culture that Afrikaans people are buying who are still buying CDs. Like, that's the thing.
It's
you must
shit.
Forget. It's either like really young people or really old people.
I've never met Afrikaans people dumb enough to buy that shit. So who are they?
I can't tell you. Fuck. I don't know, but they're buying it. It's like the old times at the old age homes.
And how do you do normal interviews?
It's like fucking people go. I see them like do like
fucking. You've been talking now. You said fuck. I don't know. I don't mind. 125 times maybe. How do you do this in an interview when you can't?
But I don't do it. I'm actually so well trained. I switch it off. I've been doing it for so long I obviously know you, so it's a conversation. But if I didn't know you, I wouldn't have sworn, because it's like almost my brain. Like sometimes, and then sometimes I'm on podcasts and stuff like that, and like things like that. I can obviously swear, and then they say, "Oh, you can swear," and then I'm like, and then I fucking have to concentrate about swearing because
I don't upset this because I like this flow, and this is how you are.
I'm talking like that. It's like
crazy
because I'm so used to not swearing on radio that if I can swear, then I have to like remember to swear. But obviously, because we've got a conversation, it's like normal to me.
No, I love
even
it.
Feel like I'm on
I've
radio
met you,
at all.
I've met you so many times before, and we've had so many conversations that it feels like I'm really talking to you as Zander here, and you know, this is the real you, which I love. But I often wonder, because I sometimes have to think about it when I'm not doing my show and I'm not around people that I know. It's kind of like if you're addressing an audience of old people, for example, you have to speak a certain way to them.
Yeah.
And I worry, because does that make us like Musi Maimane, who goes more black when he's talking to blacks and more white when he's talking to white? You know what I mean?
You know,
he gets criticized for that.
I think it's respect. I think it's respect being too. So if I'm like in a conversation with a bunch of like older people, like I'll be more respectful just because it's just a sense of respect. Obviously, I'm not going to be 100% real around like those people, because fucking they will fucking have a heart attack if I go on the way I go on. But but I am still real. So I'm still like saying real things, and I won't be fake or anything, but I'm just being a little bit more.
And in Afrikaans, you must always refer to a person older than you as Uemotani. No?
Yeah.
Dun jy dit?
But I do, but do I you? Then, but I also then start thinking when, because now these days, because I'm touring and I'm in guest houses and stuff, and then sometimes it's run by like older tannies or so, and then I feel weird being like tanny, and then I'm like, then I don't know if they will be, because some people don't like it if you call them tanny, they don't want to be called tanny, so it's like, but it is a thing, like a respect thing, woman tanny, like if it's old school Afrikaans, I don't want fucking people come to my shows and say, can I oom so foot to some oom name, and I'm like, you fucking call me oom. Once more.
He chased them out of there.
Oom just fluked on you at you on the stage. How can you fucking call me Oom?
Dude, I love the fact that you are also doing this stuff, and you're evolving, obviously, but you've stuck to the principles. Like, you know who you are, and that's hard, because as you get older, you get to know yourself more. Maybe you reveal more, but you might also have, as you said about those other artists, started on the wrong foot. You never did that. You went straight into it as you.
Yeah, but
how did you know? How did you have that certainty?
I didn't at all. I just, you know, the main thing I think that helped me was I never really did it for like fucking
popularity.
Yeah. I just did it for the fun of it. I liked doing it. I never thought I was going to get famous ever in my fucking life. Like, it was not a thing I did to get famous at all. And I swear, people say that, but I really promise you that I know any fucking, because you know, Afrikaans, I was doing something in Afrikaans. I was rapping, which is like, I was like, Afrikaans rap music, which is like fucking didn't, like there was no chance a white kid from, like the only people that were doing Afrikaans rap was obviously colored, like the colored, like guys like Brasa van die Kaap, Isaac Mutton, which I ended up actually rapping with at the end, like at the start of my career. They kind of took me under their wing and stuff. And they had a massive part in my career as well. Cause you know, I had to go to like fucking Mitchell's Plain and places like this. And I'm this white kid.
Yes. And I have that's to go, and I, fantastic. I mean, like at that time, nobody was really doing that.
Right? Yeah, so for me, I never, so that, just why I'm saying that is because I never fucking thought I would do it for a living because of there was no one else. There was no example of how I should be doing it or what I should be doing or that I would ever get a chance of doing it every day.
Do you remember a song? Because this was around the time you and I would have started listening to rap music. I know you're a big Snoop fan as well. Do you remember the Radiators? And there was that Fok it maar eens warm.
Heerlijke.
That's not a long time terug. I think it was 20. No, it wasn't even. It was 1997 or something.
Fuck, I missed it.
Yeah, that was such a good song. Fok it maar eens warm. I'm telling you, I'm going to find it for you.
Please send it to me. I want to hear that. It sounds amazing.
It was so cool and it was so out of the blue. And then they disappeared. I don't even remember where they went after that. But I remember Brasa.
Yeah, and POC.
POC?
Yeah, and there's like a, and so I think that's what saved me is because I wasn't looking at what was happening or what was cool or what like the other people were doing. I was just making fucking music that I liked, and that's what I think saved me, that I didn't try, and that's why I came out when I came out real automatically, because it was real. It wasn't like a show that I put on, or it was a show, but it was just like a embellishment of my own character, like kind of fucking with it and playing around and being all dirty and fucked up, and that's what I liked.
And are there times where you take yourself seriously?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, there's a lot of tracks on every album. There's at least one serious track. On this one, it's called Finger After, that I did with Hunter.
Tell me about that.
Well, it's just you have to listen to it actually, but it's just like it's just deep, just more introspective, I think, than anything else. And it's about how
fingerprints. What's that about?
It's about like how you guys get into this music scene and you're just trying to like kind of. Like I was trying to make music kind of a thing, and then all this other stuff happened, and then you kind of get lost in everything that's going on around you, and there's just so much, and it kind of muddles your mind up, and you have to kind of get out of it. It's difficult. Sorry.
Jesus, it sounds so complicated.
It's not that complicated.
I'm frightened to listen.
No, it's not.
Tell me complicated. About Boopens Vark. That sounds like my kind of song.
Yeah, that's lekker.
Tell me about.
Have you not
Boopens
watched the video of Boopens Vark?
Yeah,
I just went to my friend. I said, yeah.
When did it come out? The video.
It came out like a little while. It's doing like I think it's about 180,000 views. It came out like.
All right.
So I just did it. I took like. So what happened was I had this idea for a video. Then I found my friend Nathan, and he said, no, you can't do it, but because he's away. And then, but I must find Janine van Square, which is another friend of ours. She will do it. And I was like, dude, you know what the concept is? And he's like, oh, no, someone else. So then I just basically went and I downloaded 100 gigs of porn. Uh-huh. I sent it to her and tell her, cut a video. And then I just green screened my face on everyone. So it's just a porno
with
my face on it. Yeah.
And it's all these
I cannot believe you. You're going to love it.
Yeah, I mean, see, how did I know Boopens Vark would be for me?
Yeah, so it's about a, like, washed up kind of Northern Suburbs gigolo kind of vibe. that's the vibe. And then I also, the other one I just launched was My Queen and Craig, which is the other video I just launched, like, a few days ago, which is cool. You'll like it as well. So it's just like a road trip video. It's really nice. I'm really proud of it. It came out fucking lekker, yo.
And people, I see people with your caps everywhere.
Yeah. You can buy them online and fucking at shows and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. You see, you got to punt the product, right?
Yeah. No, definitely.
Are you selling a lot of brandy?
Yes, very well. And I'm so fucking thankful because we actually made a fucking profit.
A Vince.
Yeah. Also the Vince from Mokken Eerste Yard, which is like fucking for an opening, for a first product, especially in that market,
And the margins are thin, and then you have to share
super,
it.
You don't even fucking understand how thin the margins are. Mm. I don't want to, like, fucking, I feel like I'm talking about money, but we make, like, just about fuck all on a bottle. Mm. Like, you have to sell. It's a numbers game. They always say that with alcohol. You gotta sell a fuckload to make money. Because, you know, the government already takes like fucking something like 75 rand for like syntax. And then it's the labeling. Then it's this. Then it's that. Then it's the, like the fucking distribution. Then they're like a company that fucking actually does the more, like the, or does the, goes and puts it on the shelves. And like, so it's just like fucking, there's just like so much. So you end up with nothing, just about nothing. And that's why I think, that's why there's, you never see new alcohol brands, local alcohol brands come out. The only thing you see is like fucking craft stuff, which is like, which has like a different like kind of vibe to it. I mean, mine is a craft brandy, but it's like, it's just, it still falls under that higher fucking alcohol tax.
Yeah, and then there's the three big alcohol companies that kind of control the market as well.
Yeah, so, and they're douchebags, dude.
If you want shelf space, you've got to fight with them. If you want to be available in certain bars, you have to fight with them. Yeah. And they just push their money in the direction of those places, and they fuck you over,
right? Yeah, they fucking like came at, like, if I put mine on a special, then they'll go and put theirs on a cheaper special and like stuff like that.
Because they don't care. They'll sell 200,000 units and you'll sell
they'll
like
They'll
make
20. A loss and they leave a fuck. But, you know, that's why I'm so thankful. So, I mean, I always say to everyone that's supporting it, like, we always on a constant mission to kind of get it as well-priced to my audience as possible. And it's a high-quality brandy. It actually won.
I was going to ask you, what kind of a brandy is it?
So we bought the recipe. It won gold, actually, best 3-year pot still. So it's a proper brandy, and it's our recipe. A lot of people think we just rebottle like another brandy, but it's actually our brandy. And then it's, we actually won like a Michelangelo Award now as well. And it's, so it's a really lacquer fucking brandy. I'm really proud of it.
Is it stronger?
No, it's the same, but I made it a little bit. Not as bitter as say like a lower end brandy, okay, gotcha. But not as sweet as like a cognac. So it's like a nice little in the middle tasting, because you know I for example I don't like drinking so much Coke, so you can actually drink it with water. I drink it with like half ginger ale, half soda water.
Oh, nice.
Just you know, fuck. Because
the Coke gives you a fart poopens.
Yeah, fucking villa one, eh? Oh. Too much Coke. And you know, you're fucking drinking like, and Coke is like hectic. It's obviously quite a hectic thing, yo.
That's by any wimps. Then they have big boopensa from Coke and brandy.
Mm, but I'm like a klomp boopens varka.
Because you've obviously had to learn about how to make a brandy.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be the kind of person who just smack a label on something. So I know you probably know how the pot still works, how long it's aged, what kind of barrels it goes into. You know that stuff.
Yeah, well, to an extent. I mean, I'm not going to act like I just tasted it and it tasted pretty lacquer and it wasn't like good. And I was like, that's the fucking one. And, but it is, I do, I know some of it but I rather leave that's part of it. I'm not distilling it in my basement at my house or anything. I'm like leaving it to the pros. And, but I do, I did all the designs, me and once again, Marva, I'm completely, in charge of the whole like marketing and advertising kind of stuff of it. If we do anything around it, shoots, all of that type of stuff, I'm in charge of. So I have my hand on it firmly, a firm grip on it. Like, so no one can do anything without my consent or without me okaying it. So and the bottle looks fucking nice. Yeah. It's really something. You know, if you put all the other brandies there and you put that bottle in front of them, it stands out. It fucking looks hardcore. It doesn't look like, it looks like proper. It's a fucking skull on it, like gold fucking foil.
No,
I'm
amazing.
Really proud of it. It came out really fucking beautiful.
I like it. Yeah. I know I'm not even a brandy drinker and I like it.
Yeah, it's something you fucking put in your alcohol cabinet. You don't even have to drink it. It's just like a talking piece almost, which is nice, which I like about it.
You've been doing a lot of collaborative stuff.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because these days that seems to be what everyone's doing.
Like musically.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Music. I'm sorry. Not collaborating on brand. It's hard. We've got to walk a path here with each other because you and I could talk all day. So with the music collaborations, I mean, there have been a lot of people that we can go through, and I'm not talking about the whole career. So we go back, we Dirt Nasty, we got WHP, we got Hunter, we've got Happy Boys Minstrels, we got Skulk Poseidon, Twaki, Alai Swart Owens, Johnny De Ridder, Loki Rothman, Sketchy Bongo, The Hevels Fantastis. I mean, this is a huge swathe of different people.
Yeah.
Do you think rap? Particularly, yours is a different kind of rap, but I watched the Grammys and I saw Who's that? So it was Rihanna and DJ Khaled.
Okay.
And then some other dude. Who's the other dude? B.O.B., I think, maybe.
Fuck, I have no idea.
So they're up on stage, and I'm listening to Rihanna singing. Maybe I'm just old and fucking boring, but I'm listening to Rihanna, and she's doing that, wah, 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 wah. But she's good. She can sing, and Rihanna's sexy. She's like grinding. It's almost like she's having sex with an invisible person on the stage. And then the other singer is good. But in the meantime, this douchebag, DJ Khaled, she's just busy going, yeah, let me hear you, DJ Khaled. And he's making a racket. It's almost like he's heckling her while she's trying to do a performance. And I'm like, this is not adding value.
Yeah.
Well, you know what
that's
I mean?
His vibe. See, that's his fucking thing.
Yes, but he must fuck off. That's nice. Not good. I don't like, why is he ruining a good Rihanna song with his shit? And all he's saying to people is, let's go. We're like, where do you want to go? They're at the Grammys. Shut up.
Oh,
he was, just listen to that performance. You'll see what I mean.
I'll check it out.
Fucking douchebag.
Yeah, but that also irritates me. Like, if you shouldn't do that.
As a rapper, like, how much do you know you can get involved? How much shouldn't you be involved? Is it a true collaboration? Like 50-50 when you do it with these guys in terms of how you create the stuff?
Some of it. I mean, like, that song I did with that Zander, like on the new album on Africa for Beginners, there's a song called Sim Salabim, which I did with WHP, Zander Ferreira from originally from Gazelle, and myself. So there, for example, Zander wrote the chorus, WHP obviously wrote his verse, and I wrote my verse. So that's the way there, and then Johnny made the beat. So that's it. So, but then say another thing, like maybe on other things, I'll write the chorus, and I'll just know, like, oh, I like this person who, like, I want, and it sounds to me when I wrote it, that was the voice I heard. Then I'll go to them and say, listen, can you sing this? And they'll come in and they'll change it maybe a bit so it fits with their style or whatever. So that also
happens.
Does
it ever get awkward? Like, you guys all argue with each other?
No, I've never had that, touch wood, thank God.
So it's genuine, respectful collaboration.
Yeah. And you know, I'm on that Willie Nelson tip, it's fun, like making music with your friends. It's not like I'm not trying to necessarily think that, oh, I've got to make a song with this guy because fucking he'll make my career bigger or anything. Like, I mean, most of the time I make songs with people that are way, like, not to be a, like, this is a weird thing to say, but like, I'm less known than me. So I'm not trying to, it's not like career moves. Literally making music with people I like, and that's the fucking thing. Yeah, and that's the thing. And it's an honor to make music with people who are good at what they do, and it's something I always like, and it inspires me to do better and inspires me to write better stuff. So, you know, like someone will send me a verse and say, this is my verse for the song, I'll be like, fuck, this is so nice, I have to rewrite my verse. My verse has to be much better now because it's so fucking,
so
your verse is so good.
It pushes you in the direction.
Like vibes me, and like, and you know, it's and I've made good friends like Simon Rex, Dirt Nasty. He's become like a really good friend of mine. I went to go visit him in the States. We wrote the song on the new album. We wrote there at his studio in Los Angeles. So it's you create friendships.
Wasn't Simon Rex? He was like a. He was a TV guy once.
Yeah, he was in a lot. He's in Scary Movie. He's still doing a lot of stuff. He has a new show with Nick Swartzen.
He's cool, right?
Yeah, he's fucking cool. I love him. He's such a cool guy. And his alter ego, Dead Nasty, which is like the, like, right. his musical.
No, but he's a well-known dude. Yeah.
Yeah, and he was in that fucking, like, he was in the sitcom with, like, he was in a big sitcom as well, and he was like, he's done it all. Fuck, he's like, because he's born and raised Los Angeles, so he's done it all. He's been a fucking Calvin Klein model. He's like dated Paris Hilton. He's like done something like that.
LA is such a weird place. What do you think of it?
Yeah, it feels like a really big Boksburg with a section of the ocean on the side with some nice houses.
Oh, that's exactly how I described it. When I went there, I came back and said to people, it's like Kempton Park, but with some buildings you might recognize.
Yeah.
It's really,
and there's a nice ocean strip, and I mean but
Hollywood,
that's always
such shit.
Yeah, fuck, like, it's people, horrible. People, it's so depressing.
I'm going to Hollywood. You hear these people like, Hollywood's where it's at. If you've been in Hollywood, I mean, around the Kodak Theater, which is supposed to be the place where all the cool things happen, like the Oscars and the Grammys and all that shit, when they have the Grammys in LA, around it, it's like Germiston.
Yeah.
It's really bad. It's not pretty. And there's concrete, and there's huge highways, and there's massive traffic. Yeah, and
just
it's hot.
Fucking so much. Dude, I was there, when I was there the last time, we were driving, so this morning, so my best friend lives in Mexico City now. He's married to a, he married a girl there, and he's living there. And then he flew over to come visit me when I was there now last time. And we went, and you know, fuck, we're still a sucker for the tourist stuff, so we go to... The day before we left, we went to Universal Studios, and fuck, man, I was driving, and we're driving like into the city.
It's up there in the hills.
Yeah, and we're like driving in it, and I'm like, fuck, it's like so hot, but it's like some, like, was it misty? Because you can't see the top of the buildings. And the taxi driver's like, no, it's like
smog.
But it's like fucking like as low as like the fourth story, you can't see, and it's not mist, it's smog.
It's gross.
That is fucking hectic, huh? Mm. That is scarily hectic, though.
But when you drive up into the hills, you see these mansions.
Yeah.
Like where Walt Disney lived and where people like Harvey Weinstein would live, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Now, there's fucking massive houses there. I mean, there's Hollywood Hills is crazy. I mean, Hollywood is such a, America is such a... Such a crazy culture because there's such a, it's like super rich people. And then most other people are... Just like kind of middle class, like it's not like.
No, here, you know, we've got rich and poor, and very little middle class. There, they've got mostly middle class and a few rich.
Yeah, and then like some poor, super poor, but most of the poor people are also like fucking actually doing way better than the fucking poor people here.
Oh yeah,
I was driving
and
the best
poor people. And by the way, to bring in the comparison, our poor people are still doing better than the poor people in India.
Exactly. Yeah. There's always someone poorer. I wonder who that poorest person in the world is. Like, we should fucking search for him. Like, he must be bad.
That person must be eating their own shit. It must be horrible.
Fuck, yo. But I drove the funniest thing. Like, I was driving also in Los Angeles. I'm driving past this McDonald's and this dude sitting there. But you know, you get the homeless people, they are still pretty nice and stuff. But this is like a super burger. He was like, fucking his clothes has like holes in it. It was like, looks, you know, like a. Under the bridge, Joburg, like bad burgie.
Yeah, the Walking Dead.
Yeah. And he's sitting on, like, his shirt's got like, it's just like a sleeve. There's nothing, like, he's like fucking bad burgie. And he's sitting on the in front of the McDonald's on the sidewalk on his, on a laptop.
Yeah.
Like on a laptop with his iPhone plugged in. But I mean, dude, he's like burgie. Like hectic. I fucking, the taxi was just driving too fast. I couldn't get a fucking photo
of him. It's probably like some Hollywood star's son.
That's like the most first world thing. I like fucking, but, even I'm the burgies have like laptops.
It's probably like Meg
iPhones.
Ryan's kid or something. Yeah. You don't know.
Yeah, maybe he's like getting into a role.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, well, I'm living my real life. You know, I'm living my best life. I'm like, I'm doing what I need to do in the world.
Smoking crack and updating my Facebook status.
Doesn't it bother you that there are still all these people who have a problem with like weed? Because weed is such a non-issue. Yeah. And I think we could really make this country a whole lot better if we stopped imprisoning people for dealing weed.
Yeah, but I think it is happening. I think it will, you know, the only way that they'll stop imprisoning people is if the government's going to start making money off it. So I think that's at the end of the day what's going to happen. They're just going to fucking start, obviously, like, taxing on it and making it by legalizing it, it's taxable, and then it will become like finding it. Like, and that will happen. I mean, it's a massive, I don't, can't believe, like, I mean, the amount of money,
it's
that
a good cash crop for people in the Eastern Cape and people in,
exactly, it's
KZN.
Massive. You can make fucking boat tons of shit, tons of money, and the longer you take to legalize it, the more it will just be in the hands of the rich. So because they're preparing, because they know it's coming. But if you legalize it fucking long ago, it could have been such a nice thing for the rural, like, communities to grow, but now it's going to turn into something that's just like big companies and massive fucking and that, it's so crazy that even just now giving it to certain people, like giving these permits, so what they're doing is they're building fucking factories, and they just once again make, taking it all for themselves, something that comes from the earth that is so easily such an easy
commodity
for anyone to get.
Careful, because you're sounding like a communist now.
Yeah, fuck. Well, I don't know. The communist is pretty crazy, but I mean, just like something that you can grow in your backyard and sell to some chummies. That kind of thing is what I mean.
Yeah, I think everybody should be allowed to do that. And there are a lot of people. You see, the people who smoke weed will smoke weed, and the people who don't won't. So I don't see how it changes anything if you make it legal. But are you sickling with this water situation in Cape Town?
Because
you travel a lot, so probably not as much as most of us.
I do. I've got like water tanks up. I've got like a buck in my shower, and I've got like, so, and
have
I
you
mean,
seen Helen Zilla? She's looking oily and greasy and dirty.
She's living the truth of the water crisis.
Did you ever watch Pootie Tang?
Yeah.
Do you remember the bad guy in Pootie Tang?
Yeah.
Who was dusty and dirty and he wore that filthy old coat.
Yeah,
and
he
always looked like he was a little bit like tangy.
Yeah.
I don't
exactly
remember his name. Dirty D.
Yeah, Dirty D. That Dirty is D. it.
Helen Ziller's looking like Dirty D. And she's proud of it, hey? She's putting pictures of herself up on with the hair and you're like, yo, give it a wash.
But
I'm willing to fly to Joburg just to clean her up a little bit.
But it's fucking, I'm still, I fucking feel proud of her that she's living, like she's doing the living by example.
I swore I was not going to be mean or ridicule Cape Tonians for this crisis because I think it's going to get tough. I think it's going to be a lot harder and I think a lot of people are having a very hard time at the moment. And people are nervous, hey? Every lunch I went to in Cape Town, I went down there for a couple of meetings but 2-3 weeks ago. Yes, it's all people are talking about.
Yeah.
They're nervous.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it is. But I am sure with everyone working at it and everyone working together, it will get sorted out. I don't think we'll run out of water. I really don't believe that. Touchwood. I think, you know, in a crisis, people tend to fucking work together and it really feels already, I mean, it's already been, I think D-Day's already been moved on by a month, right? So that's for example, fucking, because you know they weren't getting scared. That's a fucking thing. Everyone is saying water's like, and no one's scared, no one, everyone just keeps going like they're going. And then if they didn't create that D-Day thing and say like, fucking, it's going to be fucking, there's not going to be no water. People that wouldn't have done anything. They just continue going and the D-Day would come, we'd all be fucked. So you have to like scare them, otherwise people don't listen. So I think it's also in a way that like it's good that they kind of put a date on it because it became real.
This doesn't mess with your brandy production though, does it?
No, not really. You know, there's so much brandy. You buy the base brandy. So how it works is, and remember, it's not like the whole of the Western Cape. It's just like Cape Town and surround.
Yeah. That's right.
If you go to a fucking Hermanus, you can fucking do whatever you want. You can wash your car. It's like there's like so much. There's like more than enough water. So it's not like it's once again a thing that's going to really affect the lower class, which is sad.
Yeah.
So I mean, people that have got any kind of money can just leave and go live somewhere else.
The poor people, the ones who are going to be hit the hardest.
Yeah. As always, and that's so sad. It's always that happens, and you know, so it's always sad to me that those are the people that are kind of voting for the people that are fucking it up in the first place, and they always suffer the most.
Sad. It is, but it's also like, you know, sometimes you get the government you deserve. That's what people say, and that's why I look at this whole Zuma thing. And now that he's gone, we can talk about him with a little bit of hindsight, and you can look at it objectively because you're not emotionally attached to him anymore, right? And I wonder what it is about him that we all have to take ownership of. Because he was our president. Even if you didn't vote for him, he's your president.
Yeah.
What part of me is reflected in him? Because that stuff, you know, there are a lot of people with daddy issues in South Africa. A lot of people who are looking for someone to help them. They want a savior. They want a Jesus figure. Yeah. Whatever it might be. And this guy obviously represented some of that for us. I don't know what. I'm still figuring it out. But there's something about him that was in all of us. And we need to figure out what that is.
Just the hashtag YOLO.
Yeah. YOLO. Now, listen. The holiday. The last time you were in here, you said you were planning a really big holiday. You took a trip.
Yeah.
You were looking forward to it because you'd been working really hard that year.
Yeah.
It was last year. And how did that go?
Nice. Really nice.
You said you were going to just chill. You weren't going to go anywhere fancy or expensive.
Yeah, chilled fucking hard. It was great. I feel much better. But I've already destroyed that holiday so quickly by just one nice proper tour. but I'm feeling better. Feeling much better. I'm feeling rested. I shot a video in that time as well, which I went to like Elands Bay and like the Cedarburg and like all these like really nice places and I feel much better. You know, there's going to be a hectic year as always. Like, there's a lot planned.
Are you working every weekend? Booked up every single weekend.
Pretty much, and also these longer tours. I've got because the album came out, I've got some big tours. Like I got this one now that was 10 days, and then as soon as I get back, I'm home for like a week, And then on Sunday, I fly to Holland for 2 weeks. So it's hectic. Huh? It's like it is hectic, and it is.
The family takes strain when you do this?
Yes, very much. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they must be grateful when they can buy the shit they want.
Tell them that. Send them a voice note.
All right, man. Listen, it's always good to catch up with you.
Lekker.
The album is called Africa for Beginners, but it's Afrika met 'n K. And you can find it, if you buy this thing, it's not only a great selection of tracks, and you put on like major value here. We've got 18 tracks, which people do look at. They go, how much am I getting for this? You're also getting a work of art, which could be a vagina, could be a Zulu shield. And it's got...
And a gold foiled AK-47 on the inside.
Absolutely.
Cool stuff.
Beautiful.
And you know, beginners and beginners are spelled the same. So it's called Africa for beginners. And Africa for beginners. And you know, it's... The thing I also like about it is I had to put a 4 in it because I thought it was so rap, putting like a number in your album cover.
It is. It's very good. But this is really great design, dude. Yo, this guy's good.
Yeah, and the guy on the other side, this photos, Andre Bordenhorst, is such a good photographer. That's like, I really love the photos he's taking. He's like so talented. I really
wacky.
Love it.
It's fantastic. Fuck, I love it. All right, listen, keep doing your marvelous work. We love what you're doing. And
thank you.
And we get you in here again, talk to you again soon.
It's so lekker being here. Every time I'm so glad that I come to Close Central and you get to interview me.
Well,
like the other times anyone else interviewed me was pretty fun, but not as fun.
You are not ever boring and you don't ever fail to deliver. So,
but fuck.
Yeah.
I said fuck so many times. It was great.
There we are. Thanks, bro. Nice to see you. CliffCentral.com.